Into the Fold is a podcast on mental health issues, produced by the Hauck Foundation for Mental Health. The Hauck Foundation is a strategic grant maker based at the University of Texas at Austin. To learn more, visit us at hogg.utexas.edu. Hello, everyone. This is Ike Evans, and you are listening to Into the Fold. Leading into the 86th legislative session, there were a number of events that contributed to the attention given to mental health and safety in schools. There were recent tragedies, including Hurricane Harvey, and the Santa Fe High School shooting, which emphasized for a lot of people the need to explore how to best support students, their teachers, and our schools as a whole. Senate Bill 11 was a major focus of the session, and it aimed to address safe and supportive schools, with mental health as just one component of that legislation. There were also provisions around school hardening strategies and staff training in case of an emergency. And so as the legislative session wrapped up, the question of whether the conversation managed to balance mental health and security still remains. This is an opportunity to explore what more we can do to keep our kids supported and safe. Joining us to discuss this are Shannon Hoffman, policy program specialist for the Hauck Foundation, and a coworker of mine, and Tracy Spinner, director of Comprehensive Health Services and Mental Health for Austin Independent School District. Shannon and Tracy, thank you for joining us.
Thanks. Thanks for having.
I'm excited. Thanks.
It's going to be great.
I thought that I would begin by having both of you tell us a bit about yourselves, your work, and your engagement with this issue.
So thank you so much, Shannon and Ike, for inviting me. This is wonderful. My background is in public health and health education. I have a bachelor's in health and wellness promotion and a master's in education, and have worked for the Austin Independent School District in this position for the past 16 years. Going into my 17th year, which I cannot believe it. And so in my office, I oversee all of our programs related to school health, which include our health services, mental health services, our family resource centers, threat assessment, all of our vision and hearing department. So anything really clinical health related is in my office.
Okay, and that was Tracy Spinner.
Sorry, I didn't introduce myself.
No, that's fine. That's my job. Yes. Don't do my job. No, I'm kidding. A little bit. Shannon.
Sure. This is Shannon Hoffman. I am the program policy specialist, coworker, and policies related to the intersection of schools and mental health was a priority area for the Hauck Foundation. It was something I specifically focused on throughout the legislative session and continue to do so. But before I moved into the policy realm, I was a clinician and I worked in a dual diagnosis residential facility with adolescents living with mental health conditions and substance use. And I have a very vivid memory of a young man who, during the school component, since it was residential, there was a school component during the school year, he had an outburst in the classroom, seemingly for no reason. And when it was further explored, it was found out that there was a word problem that had mentioned a child getting reprimanded for not cleaning his room. Well, for this young man, that triggered a memory of his father physically abusing him for the same issue. And so his reaction was unaddressed trauma. And because he had access to supports and his counselor and was able to look at what happened and comprehend what had happened, he was able to de-escalate, process, and return to the classroom and really engage in his learning. And so I wanted to bring that experience and be able to apply that to my job, and schools and mental health was a really large focus this year at the session.
Tracy, as someone who has a background in education, you have to think all the time about what young people need, and even to process all of what is considered to be the latest thinking about what young people need, and even talk back to some of that when you feel warranted. So is the kind of attention that young people are now getting from policymakers entirely the best kind? I hope that's not too leading a question. And what do you try to get across to policymakers in your discussions with them?
You know, in my term with Austin ISD, I've participated in many a legislative session. And my experience during this last session was very positive and, you know, hopeful, truly. I mean, I spoke to legislators and representatives on both sides. And what I heard across the board was they really want to help, and they really wanted to identify what are those best strategies, what are those best practices in addressing, you know, the needs of young children, adults for that matter, in the mental health space. And they really wanted to talk to experts across the field, whether it was early childhood experts, school-based experts, experts in adult, in policy, in planning, in community, like development and relationships. And so what I found, you know, during this session was that everybody that I interacted with had an eager to learn. And then even around the hardening of schools conversation, because that's very physical. And some might say that that's a Band-Aid approach, that it doesn't truly address the underlying issues that some of these individuals who have made decisions to violent attack on a campus or a workplace have chosen for themselves. So that hardening piece, that there is a role for mental health within that conversation. And that was what I found mostly just really encouraging when I interacted with legislators. One of my big points that I made to them was like hardening of schools and these physical things such as metal detectors, inspection wands, school marshals, those may be appropriate for districts, but truly allow districts to choose. But within that choice, please include, you know, funding or a focus around mental health in schools. And we were very pleasantly surprised when Taylor issued the final version of SB 11, that it did include a bullet point around that, you know, any funding appropriated within that could, you know, mental health in schools could also be something that was funded under SB 11.
So, yeah, I'm a product of AISD, grades 1 through 12. And so my next question, because I don't remember mental health being talked about very often, when I was a grade school student. So what is Austin Independent School District doing nowadays to support overtly, I guess, you know, I can remember plenty of times seeing teachers respond to problem students, but I don't know that mental health was ever actually surfaced as the thing that was being dealt with. So what's going on these days?
Yeah, so you're doing great. I'm glad that you said that you went to Austin ISD. What school did you go to?
I went to Wynn Elementary, then Blanton Elementary, then Keeling, and then LBJ.
That's amazing. That's awesome. Well, yeah. Thank you for sharing that. And, I'm really proud of the work that the district is doing and that we have embarked on over the past 6 years. We started talking about school-based mental health services at that kind of that highest tier, tier three level, back over, 6 years ago, where we opened our first mental health center at Crockett High School. And you know, we had a pilot, a very short, like 4-month pilot, where we had a full-time clinician. She was a psychologist who, with parent consent, could see students who were referred to her either from their school counselor or from the nurse or the principal in the building, and, you know, receive an assessment and possibly a diagnosis if symptoms presented themselves in that way, and then a treatment plan, and then actually receive that mental health treatment there on the campus. And, you know, so trying that and a very short pilot, you know, 4-month pilot isn't a long time. But within that, you know, we saw 35 students, and all of those students improved in some capacity, whether it was clinically or they reengaged back in the academic environment where they attended school more frequently as compared to when they weren't attending. Their grades had even improved in that short time period. So it was very clear that we were onto something. And so we really began to look at our entire picture of mental health and how we're supporting mental health as a district. Everything from implementing a district-wide social emotional learning foundation across every district and every campus. And that really gets at, you know, allowing and educating students and teachers even to be able to identify, you know, feelings, emotions that you have, and what do you do with those things, right? And being able to be empathetic and control your emotions and have appropriate, you know, reaction to others who may be experiencing some feelings. And so having, you know, this multi-tiered systems of support from the foundation of social emotional learning, and then of course all of our amazing professional school counselors who are supporting students with resources, with skill building, with academic counseling across every one of our campuses. And then we have social workers in the district. And then, of course, at the Tier 3 level, we have grown from one campus that has a mental health clinician all the way now to 45 campuses, elementary, middle, and high school, that have multiple full-time clinicians that are providing mental health clinical services to students, staff, and family members.
And what are some of the, I guess, more innovative ideas out in the field about how schools can support the mental health of students that maybe AISD is some way toward considering adopting?
You know, I don't think it's so innovative as it is just getting back to the root of building those relationships and connections. Mm-hmm. And part of that, like, root building is to understand the just foundational brain development of adolescents. So in Austin ISD, a couple years ago, we really began looking at the work from Dr. Bruce Perry and that neurosequential model for education, and also looking at the impact and the role of trauma and how that has such an impact on those, like, adolescent childhood experiences and how it impacts an adolescent's brain from being able to develop and learn and participate socially. So I don't know if it's so innovative an approach as it is getting back to the root and the foundation of what really matters. And it's that relationship, it's that connection, because it's within that space that you're going to be able to see as an educator, as a teacher, as a staff member, or even as just a peer, a shift in behavior or a trend in behavior where, as you know, if once, like myself as an example, I'm an outgoing individual, but over time, if somebody starts to notice a change in my behavior, if we have that trusting relationship and we have that connection, that they're going to not only be able to notice that, but also be able to say, hey, help me understand what's going on, and not blame me for, oh, Tracy, why are you so cranky, right? And it's like, help me understand what's going on with you so that I can help connect with you better, or I can help connect you with a trusting person to help you get the help that you need.
So this will be a nice bridge over to, you know, what Shannon will be telling us about the policy environment. So my last question for this, I guess, part of the conversation, Tracy, is, how is AISD addressing and implementing the requirements of Senate Bill 11?
Wow. You know, Senate Bill 11 has multiple components that the district, we're currently, you know, focusing on and unpacking that bill. And the one that, you know, my office is specifically focusing on is the implementation of a comprehensive approach to threat assessment. And really, you know, what does that mean? Because threat assessment, it sounds scary, right? It sounds like, oh, I don't know if we want to do that. But threat assessment, it's not a punitive process. It is a preventative process. And as a matter of fact, it's designed to be a systemic preventative process. And in additionally, it's not a checklist. Like, I don't want our listeners to feel like the district is, you know, we're going to create this checklist to be able to identify students who are a threat. That is not what we're doing. We're building a framework to be able to assess behaviors that identify risk factors based on that trend in behavior. And of course, this will include, you know, training for staff on how do we identify threats in quotations to, you know, if somebody says, you know, I want to harm myself or other people. Now, just making a statement alone that says, you know, I want to hurt you, Shannon, that statement alone may not necessarily be a threat. It's when it's, Shannon, I want to hurt you. I know where you live and I have access to a weapon, which then poses a threat, which is very different. And that's a very different conversation. And so what the district is doing is that we're creating a framework around the requirements of SB 11 so that we can identify patterns of behavior and identify when students truly pose a threat to themselves or others so that we can intervene early with appropriate resources and action. Because what we know from the cases of active shooting that have happened in the United States, those individuals didn't just wake up one day and say, I'm going to go kill some people today. That pathway of violence is a process. It's not an event. And so there's a lot of opportunity as a school district, partnering with community providers and partners and policy experts to be able to say what is that framework where we can really begin to identify these patterns of behavior, identify these pre-incident indicators where we can really put the brakes on that pathway to violence as we're connecting students with those preventative interventions.
Okay. Thank you so much, Tracy. So now, Shannon, I mentioned Senate Bill 11 in my intro.
Yes.
Can you summarize for us what the bill does and what it requires from school districts and educators?
Sure. So I could spend hours going through SB 11. It's a huge bill. It's 56 pages. But in interest of time, I'm going to give a very high level overview of some of the more major parts of the bill. And as we've been discussing and you've alluded to, it is really addressing both sides of the school of thought around school safety, if you will, both from the physicality, hardening, security, preparedness, but also looking at increasing supports, mental health, and otherwise. And so SB 11 includes numerous provisions, starting with developing and amending rules around facility standards and really addressing physicality of current rules and moving forward when new schools are built. It outlines and updates the requirements for the multi-hazard emergency operations plan. I'm going to try not to use acronyms, including mandatory staff training, drills, looks at districts, student and employees, how they're responding to emergencies, and really on that portion puts an emphasis on the physiological safety of students, personnel, and the community. It gives the Texas State School Safety Center oversight of the school's safety and security audits. It one of the things that was really great, I think, about it is it's expanding the health curriculum and the education that students are going to be getting starting in elementary school, age appropriate, throughout high school, looking at mental health conditions, substance abuse, managing emotions, establishing healthy relationships, responsible decision making, suicide prevention, as well as digital citizenship, which I think is incredibly important now with this day and age, the importance of the digital citizenship with cell phones and the internet. Instructing TEA to work with the education service centers and developing inventories of mental health resources within the area, which will then be compiled into a statewide inventory, and they'll also be working on a statewide plan to address student mental health. Tracy talked about the threat assessment teams and what that's going to be looking like, and that'll be required of all school districts. The School Health Advisory Committee, which gives recommendations for schools on a number of things. Suicide prevention and parental engagement are two additional responsibilities that the SHACs will be responsible for recommending to the school district. All new school resource officers beginning September 1st are going to be required to receive specialized training related to interacting appropriately with students, diverse student populations, mental health crises, and as well as interacting with children that may have disabilities. And then also there's some time built in for current school resource officers for some time to receive those trainings as well. I believe that's August 2020. And let's see, also what Tracy talked about, school districts are going to be getting some funding. There was $100 million allocated to basically give an allotment to all schools based on average daily attendance. And it's really up to the school's discretion, whether it is the physicality hardening, but also give schools the flexibility to use for mental health services and supports. And then lastly, SB 11 was amended to include SB 10, which will be creating the Texas Mental Health Care Consortium. And it's comprised of 13 health-related institutions of higher education, a number of nonprofits, including the Hogg Foundation, and some state agencies. And essentially, does a lot, but very, very high level, addressing access to care and workforce. So that's it.
Well,
like SB 11 is it the biggest bill around this subject? It is so, it has so much, but I'm excited to hear about the telehealth piece.
Yeah.
That is something that's new in Austin ISD that we're going to, you know, that's we're great. Partnering with a telehealth provider to really look at the comprehensive telehealth model to not only include the physical health, but also the mental health piece. So I'm excited that piece, I didn't realize that SB 10 was also like dog-tailed on to SB 11.
So, okay. So yeah, that was a lot, Shannon. Now, however, what else do you think should be added to the conversation about school safety?
Sure. So, and I think Tracy said it too, there was so much great work done, but I think there are still more opportunities to move forward and address some maybe additional things that are included in school safety and in creating a safe and supported school environment, necessarily outside of active school shooters and prevention around that. And that is to look at classroom removals and addressing the school to prison pipeline, really all around discipline in school, especially children of color and with disabilities who are disproportionately affected, and how we can address behaviors in the classroom through a lens of trying to understand the why and provide supports and appropriate intervention rather than implementing temporary punitive measures when most likely that student will be returning to the classroom. And unfortunately, at times that removal is justified through safety. And so if we are wanting to really address the underlying potentially issue or concern for both the teacher and the student, because teachers shouldn't feel unsafe in the classroom, I don't think that's ever a part of the conversation. However, if a student just cycled essentially in and out of the classroom, the underlying issue is really never going to be addressed. And if that child's behavior is a symptom or a manifestation of a disability or mental health concern or substance abuse, then essentially the removal from the classrooms may not only exacerbate that underlying condition or concern, but the child's learning is interrupted, the classroom is interrupted for the teacher, and potentially the school environment is going to continue to be a concern in the future for that student and the teacher.
Okay.
Yeah, Shannon, you bring up a great point, and that's, one of the reasons why for in Austin ISD, our district threat assessment team, we not only included representatives from special education, but also our Office of Cultural Proficiency and Inclusiveness, so that we have that lens. And I would encourage all districts who are looking in creating your district and your campus's multidisciplinary threat assessment teams or behavior assessment teams, you know, however you want to title it, to really include those professionals and be mindful, like every meeting, like have it on your agenda that you're talking about these biases and that you're talking about these disproportionalities. So we don't have this revolving door effect where we're removing students who are exhibiting concerning behaviors, removing them, they go back in, removing, go back in, removing, and going back in. And we're not truly addressing the why. And it gets back at that foundation of, help me understand you, right? Yeah. That lens of trauma-informed care, like help me understand what's going on with you. But I love that you talked about that kind of next opportunity related to this work.
So looking ahead, mm-hmm. First, what other interesting developments related to school safety came up during the last session? And then what might be on the agenda of the next one?
So next session, I really hope the legislature recognizes that there's still more work to be done around this area and that it wasn't 140 days. We, did all this great stuff and don't need to go back and continue the work. There's still some misinformation about violence and mental illness. We know mental illness does not predict dangerousness. And really, mental health is just one component of addressing the overall school climate. And so providing a multi-tiered systems of support, which I think most of us that are in this arena believe that is the most appropriate way to address a lot of mental health and school climate. And really looking at implementing strategies and supports that cultivate that positive school climate, like trauma-informed education, positive behavior interventions and supports, social-emotional learning, that it's not only beneficial for the kids that may need that clinical mental health or have a diagnosed mental illness, but is really beneficial for all kids, all students, and the entire school. And then secondly, I think there's opportunities to discuss how the legislature and advocates can support schools and teachers as they address school safety and are implementing a lot of these opportunities that have been placed upon them. We know there's $100 million appropriated to schools to use. That's a lot of money. And so if they are using it for security and hardening, how can we ensure that there are also counselors and mental health professionals? You know, are school marshals and school resource officers being properly trained? And are they supported to interact with diverse student populations? And I think also one of the conversations that I didn't hear too much about is how kids and staff are being supported through a lot of those drills that they're going to be required to participate in. They can be scary and potentially traumatizing for the kids and teachers. And so how is support being offered before, during, and after those as well?
Okay. So these last two questions are for both of you. What else would either of you like to add about this issue, and what haven't we covered? And Tracy, why don't you take a swing at it?
Yeah, I mean, I think in our very short conversation, we have said a lot of amazing things, Shannon. We're going to high five after this for sure, and Ike too. I think just, for those listening, it's just, again, to destigmatize mental health and to talk about it. I mean, talk about it like you would, hey, what did you have for breakfast today, Shannon? Yeah. Hey, how are you feeling today? How are you doing? Man, I saw something on the news and man, it was pretty heavy. I would love if we can chat about it because we're friends. And, it's just being able to have those, very real, honest, vulnerable conversations with people close to you. And then, you know, when there are some concerning behaviors or a change or, you know, a difference in how you behaved or your friend or your colleague was behaving from what's normal for them, because, you know, some of us are just kind of quirky and quirky is normal for us, right? But if you were not quirky and then all of a sudden you're quirky and that quirky kind of, you know, spirals into other concerning behaviors, you know, we want everybody to feel very safe. In that motto of see something, say something, that we really want to remind people that it is not the pathway to, you know, punitive, and we're not going to discipline those students or staff members who are reaching out and saying, you know, I'm really concerned about something that I've seen. And even if it ends up being nothing, awesome. We just had a connection that we've built a trusting relationship with each other. But if it turns out to be something, it is something that we can address from a proactive lens versus a reactionary, where then it becomes a crisis event. And so again, just reminding everybody, you know, get to know your neighbor, get to know each other, put our phones down, be present, be comfortable talking about mental health, and, you know, see something and say something.
Okay. And lastly, wait.
We forgot Shannon.
Yes.
Well, no, I won't spend too much time, because I do think we talked about a lot, and what Tracy said's amazing. But one thing I'll add is I thought was interesting. Another state, Oregon's legislature just passed a law that includes mental health or behavioral health as an excused absence in statute if they're seeking outside mental health or behavioral health services. I'm curious to learn more about that, especially as our state really is working on and addressing mental health parity.
Okay. Well, we are about done. Tracy, Shannon, this was great.
Thank you.
It was awesome.
Yeah, it was
I'm
fun.
Feeling
That's
energized.
Let's do it again.
And I don't get to say that very often. So thank you so much for taking time out of your busy days to talk to us. We really appreciate it.
Thanks, Ike.
Thanks, I appreciate it.
We have done other episodes on mental health in our schools. To give you a taste, here is a snippet from episode 42, our interview with Stephanie Bryan of the Hogg Foundation and Elizabeth Minnie of Vita Clinic here in Austin, on improving academic achievement through mental health in schools.
We believe that we know that if we really want to change the way of life on our school campuses, we need to elevate the importance of teacher wellness so that we're understanding teachers more as being uniquely equipped to, you know, meet the demands of a very fast pace and often unpredictable environment. For us, those of us who are running this project, it's extremely important that we are conveying unconditional positive regard and respect for our teachers through all of our interactions with them.
You can find links to this and other related content in the description for this episode. Thank you so much for joining us.